Yo, what up? I'm Danny.
Hey, I'm Keith.
And I'm Reno.
And I'm Pauly, a.k.a. Uncle Pauly, and it's all bad.
As you might have noticed, there's no more ads on this show. And that's possible because of Patreon and guys like you and gals. So please subscribe on Patreon. We got special gift for you, and tell a friend. What up, Pauly? Yeah, what thanks up? For coming out, man.
It's great. Yeah. I couldn't pick three better people I would love to talk to. Oh, yeah. I mean, these are my guys. It's great.
We feel
so regular Tuesday afternoon, just having a coffee and ripping a cig.
Yeah.
I like that he came right from a fucking meeting into this.
Yeah.
Straight from the log cabin, baby. Let's go. I'm all jacked up on that log cabin coffee, you know?
Dude. Ripping zins and fucking
that's it.
Pounding cold brews.
It's a motley crew in there.
Yeah.
A lot of characters.
Oh, yeah.
It's always been wild over there, man. I used to live over there on, like, Doheny, and I would, you know, be at the cabin a lot, or that Wangle meeting on Tuesday nights late at the West Hollywood Recovery Center.
Oh, yeah, Wangle.
It was kind of popping over there back then. And, a bunch of those people made their way this way and shit.
Yeah, the back row gets a little, there might be a dude with his pants down in the back row. That's a little crazy.
Oh, yeah, it's like that?
I mean, people are just straggling, like moseying on in there. Like, yeah. They don't, like...
There's people
walking. Dudes just walk in to wash their hands and leave. Like, it's fucking like, all right. Keep coming back.
Yeah. There's a dude who used to sleep on the stairs there, and then he ended up getting sober. He's a dude that would sleep on the stairs and would go to meetings there. He was a guy, he was at CRLA.
Who?
I don't remember his name.
Oh, yeah,
that dude Matt, who goes to Brunswick, he was homeless.
Yeah, damn. Which one?
And just the older dude with the beard, kind of skinny.
Dude's always walking around and shit, or no?
Yeah. My man probably just walked down from the Abbey from just getting into some business. Yeah. Went in to wash the lube off.
Making a few bucks.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's wild, though. That neighborhood is fun. It's fun as fuck. So anyway, man, dude, thanks for finally making it over. I know we're a nightmare to schedule shit with, but we love having you here. Thanks for making it.
I'm glad we made it happen.
Yeah.
This is awesome.
Yeah.
And somehow you got Reno here 12 minutes early. I don't know how.
And I'm 35 minutes late, so it works out. So you guys got to catch up a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, dude, I was like, 45 minutes ago, I was fucking making home fries and, cooking a pizza for the kids and turning off iPads and being daddy duty and shit, which is what I wanted to ask you about. I mean, you're in here looking ripped and chiseled. You've been in the gym doing the damn thing.
Dude, my man is married. Can you back off of that shit?
Old habits, bro. Old habits. No, but when do you find the time to get in there and drill iron like that, man?
I treat it like right now, lately, I've been treating it like a job. Like, I put it in my calendar, like, I'm gonna be at the gym at 9:30 every day, so I stay accountable to it. And I just, once I started going, it was the hardest part is getting up and going to the fucking gym.
Yeah,
like, once you're there,
true.
I throw my headphones on, I'm in a groove. A little pre-workout helps, gets me a little fucking, yipped out of my head. But
you do it pre-workout zine and coffee?
Nah, I do coffee for right out the gate, and then I'll do like a pre-workout.
Sure,
but, I drop the kid off at school or camp. And then I'll just go rip to the gym, and then I'm at the shop by 10:30. It works out,
It's good.
It makes me better in every aspect of my life. You know what I mean? Like, it makes me a better father because I got energy and I'm present and I'm fucking, it's just my mood is better and
the
it makes me great at work.
Levels and all that stuff
Everything,
gets turned up, man.
It's
true. Working out really is like such an amazing thing to layer in on top of the recovery thing because once the obsession to use and drink has kind of subsided, then it's like we're obsessed mentally over fucking controlling life and money and
cookies.
Business and all this kind of stuff.
Cookies.
And
once you see it starts working, you're like, oh, okay, this is fun.
I've been going to Barry's boot camp. Like,
that'll get you fucked.
Yeah. Fucking
yeah.
I mean, you told me you first were doing it about 6 weeks ago.
Yeah, but I've been like, if I can go, I go every morning.
Uh-huh.
And I took Jeff Johnson this morning and got my ass whipped. But I feel fucking so much better. Like, I woke up all anxious and shit, and I fucking meditated, and then...
I wake up in the morning now. Remember in wrestling when The Undertaker, when he got knocked down, and the guy brought the urn out, and he would just get up? That's how I wake up in the morning now. I get up like a fucking psycho. I'm like, where are we going? What are we... I'm like what the... Like, this is... Who am I? Like, I'm just like... I'm not like laying in bed for 15 minutes. Like, it's just... Yeah, completely. So that alone is like,
I mean,
I'm
you
like,
look fucking great.
Thank you, man.
Yeah,
I appreciate it.
It's good shit, man.
And I'm just trying to...
This is why he walked
trying
up,
to cut
like,
down on the sandwiches.
I'm like, now the motherfucker's on the Barry Sennett stunt double and shit.
about to change my phone number.
Hell yeah, man.
We got Uncle Petey and shit here.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you what. I heard you talking to Jimmy Gorecki a while back on his podcast, and I was definitely vibing out on your story. It's really cool. So originally, you were born and raised in Queens?
I'm born and raised in Queens, like Flushing area.
Run DMC, all that?
No, they're in Hollis, but everybody, you know, Queens is like...
Small,
know.
Yeah.
No, it's big. It's actually the biggest borough. Yeah, it's the biggest, like... They say if, like, you get on the 7 train, you go through every single ethnic country. You could get every kind of food. It's, like, the most diverse place in the world. It was, like, not... It wasn't, like... It was not segregated at all. You grew up with, like... I grew up with Colombians, Greeks, Korean, Japanese. Like, you name it.
That's
like,
wild.
It's, like, the biggest...
Melting pot.
It's crazy. It was such a blessing. Now... In hindsight, when I travel and I come to other cities or countries or whatever it is, you can see like the segregation's crazy. Like that. Yeah. I didn't grow up like that. Yeah. I didn't grow up with like seeing colors and all this other stuff. We were just all homies. Like we just all hung out in the schoolyard and
knuckleheads. Cool,
like I would eat my friends. My boy Roger was Colombian. My boy Andy's Greek. My boy Avi's Albanian Muslim. Like it was just like fucking a whack pack of just
that's a trip.
Mania. Yeah.
A lot of different. I mean, when you drive it. Or take the train, like, to JFK or in a car going LaGuardia, either way. Queens is long as fuck,
it's big,
man.
Dude. It's
and you
big.
Can see the little hoods and the little different vibes and, like, the row houses right up on the highway.
Like Jamaica and that whole area.
Those big kind of, like, not quite project-looking housing projects. Like, where they're not kind of busted, but they're kind of... Or, like, Left Rack City
Left
all
Rack
that
City,
shit.
Of course.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, it's a trip, man.
Yeah, that's when my dad's from over by the airport. My dad's from the airport, over by the airport. That's where I was like actually born in Ozone Park, which was like really Italian, and now it's more
John Gotti Ozone Park.
That's the neighborhood.
Oh, really?
Yeah. 118 and Sutter is where my dad, where I lived till I was like 7, 8, and then I moved to Flushing area. But like, yeah, my family on 118 and Sutter, they had 3 houses on the block. My aunt lived across the street with my uncle and my 2 cousins. We lived across the street. My grandparents lived next door, and that's how that shit was.
That's
like,
cool.
On Sunday, it was like, "Where are we going?" Grandma says, "We walked 2 houses down." Like, all right. Everybody's getting hammered and just fucking crossing the street. Like,
generational.
No designated drivers, you know. It was dope.
That's fucking cool, man. It sucks that that's kind of like gone. You know what I mean? Yeah, maybe not back there, but like
that area kind of got all mixed up and stuff. But it's a beautiful place to be from. Now when I'm 42 now. And seeing that and like, you know.
When you were a kid, there was still mobs and mafia dudes. And
oh,
shit
yeah,
then, right?
Yeah. Yeah, not like, yeah, when I was like, I mean, that was, yeah. John Gotti only got fucking arrested. Like, he only got convicted like in, like, I think, the late 90s. It was big. I remember the newspaper covers, Teflon Don and all that stuff. And like, my dad knew a lot of those guys. My grandparents knew a lot of those dudes. Like, that's from that neighborhood, you know. He knew all. If I show my dad like a podcast of like all these new mob guys that you know the hell
they all got podcasts.
Like he knows all these guys. Like he knew Henry Hill.
Oh,
like they
wow.
were like my dad used to like buy weed off Stacks that was got killed in Goodfellas.
Oh no
like,
shit.
Yeah, like it was Samuel L. Jackson. Like he's like I used to buy weed off the real Stacks. Like he was like a jazz musician.
Fuck.
So they were like stories for days. Like
that's a trip.
Yeah,
it was
very active. It was you know.
Yeah, out of all the flicks, man, I think that Goodfellas is the banger. Yeah. You know what I mean? I'm an aficionado. I fucking love all of them. I've read a bunch of the books too, and I've listened to some of the podcasts too. I mean, it's wild. All those dudes have
Michael
their own
Franchisi.
Is a trip too. Yeah. He's like one of the only dudes that ever made it out. You know, without...
he's like born again now, but really? He did a crazy oil scheme. He was robbing gas
hustle.
Oh yeah.
He was a made member of one of them families, and he brought because that's the whole thing.
Let's
right?
be careful what we say, Reno. I don't want to get one.
This is all documentary reading and shit. Yeah, but let's switch it up. So when did you start partying, man?
What I grew up in Queens and my, you know, I have 2 parents that had, you know, I mean, listen, my parents were having a good time.
Having a good time.
They were having a good time. They were young. My parents met, my parents conceived me after a Clash show at Shea Stadium. Like,
no
they went
way.
To see the Clash at Shea Stadium.
No
the famous
shit.
Album. And my dad knocked my mom up in October of, like, 82. I was born in fucking 83. And, like, that was, like, their, like, third date. You know,
you're talking
like,
about the Combat Rock Tour.
Yeah, it was. I think
that, oh, that's a big. Yeah, 83,
so,
right?
Just imagine, you know, as without like, you know, I love him, God bless him. You know, I was a latchkey kid.
Yeah.
So as soon as I was 12, like I was out in the streets in the schoolyard, and it was just like, you know, growing up with the older guys in the neighborhood and kind of not having. You know, much like it was just, you know, those were the guys that we were hanging
and
out.
And it was mixed, you say, in the neighborhood, right?
Of,
it wasn't like, hey, Paulie, fucking, you come with us and the guineas or whatever.
Yeah, so it was just like
smoking weed. Was it skateboarding and shit? Or listening
to a lot of skateboarding, a lot of BMX, a lot of handball and all that stuff. But just growing up in like the neighborhood, running around, fucking breaking windows and, you know, beefing with like other school, like other yard, like school, like there would be like, you know, I'd be like in one schoolyard, like we'd be at like, you know, one elementary school, like in the yard, and like we'd hang out in the playground, and then there'd be another one, and we'd beef with them, and it would
beef
like,
with fucking PS,
yeah,
whatever, whatever.
Exactly. You know, it would be like, yeah, PS like 42, and it'd be like, fuck those guys.
That's a trip.
Yeah, so that was kind of my entry, like just being around the older guys, and just whatever was around, we were just going crazy, you know, it was just.
And then somebody busted out the booze and the weed at some point?
Yeah. Yeah, that was like when I was probably 12, 11, it was the first time I remember my first 40 in like a driveway and like just getting annihilated.
What was the 40? What did you drink?
Old English, dude. It was fucking Snoop era, you know? It was Old English. It was like, you know, it was I think it was probably 90, it was probably 93, it was like what, I mean, yeah, 93, 94, it was fucking Dre Day. It was like when he opened up the fridge and all the 40s were in the fridge. I'm like, give me one of those.
Hell yeah. That scene in the video.
Yeah,
right,
exactly.
Where he comes in,
yeah.
They open the fridge and they got like the dry ice fucking coming off all the 40s. That shit was cool, man.
Yeah,
that
was fun, man.
It's so funny how back then there was just so little content compared to now that just has so much impact on people. Like, for example, like the first Beastie Boys album was like everybody's fucking anthem.
Yeah.
Fast forward to that, obviously MTV was up and running or whatever, whatever. But that Dr. Dre album just took the country, man.
Yeah, that was definitely big in on the East Coast. I mean,
shit,
there was
crazy.
No like, yeah, that was huge.
So drinking 40s, and the next thing you know, you're drinking, smoking weed or whatever.
Yeah, and then it was just, you know, off to the races, just having a good time. I mean, I was going to school. You know, I went to a bunch of schools. you know, and I wasn't like a bad kid per se. I was just not interested. You know, I was just not, and I didn't have many consequences. Like I didn't go home. Like I didn't get like, you know, I didn't get like really reprimanded when I went to school. And I would think I was like 16, and I missed so many days of school where the guidance counselor was like, "You're never gonna graduate. You might want to just go get your GED."
I had that same conversation too.
Yeah, you might want to just go get your GED and just like skip all this bullshit, because I was just kind of getting in trouble. You know, I was getting those letters at home, and I was trying to, you know, I would get beat the mailman and grab the letters before anybody seen them. And
good fellow style.
And then I actually got my GED right away, because I had somewhat, because I was paying attention. I just wasn't participating. I was sleeping and whatever. But I mean, the GED is not fucking, you know, you don't got to be a rocket scientist to pass your GED.
Right.
And then I ended up going to community college like when I was like 17. Which was like my boys were still in high school and I was like in community college, and I was like, yo, you guys got like the high school chicks. I'm in like a community college with a bunch of like 20 year old, 19, 20 year old. I'm like, I was chilling. And I went to community college for like 3 years.
But what really community college was
Queens
it?
Queens Community College.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it was more for optics. It wasn't for like, you know.
Yeah.
When I got my GED, I went to like a GED school like out of my neighborhood. It was in Astoria, so I had to take like a bus or train, whatever. And that GED school that I went to was like Gladiator School. Like it was like all that, like I used to write graffiti, and it was like the melting pot of all like the graffiti writers that I kind of knew who they were. And it was like once I got, we all started hanging out. That's when I kind of got into going to Manhattan. I used to go to Manhattan and chill and stuff, but like then when I actually went to that school and got on the train and we would go after class to go to the city, we call it the city.
Yeah, for sure.
That's when everything started changing, and it was just like all types of, like it was like clubs and sneaking into shit, and it was like 17, 18, really getting into like.
So when you live in the outer boroughs growing up, like, it's not really popping, like, in the cities where all the action is.
No, I mean, there's strips with, like, bars and stuff, like, but, like, no, you, like, anything active.
The city for music and all that shit. Yeah,
that's
cool.
You know, we all ended up migrating into Manhattan, you know, and that's when everybody just started, that's when all the fun starts, you know.
it's always, for graffiti especially, for, like, the graph heads, it's always a continuation school, or summer school where it cracks off. Like, I grew up, I went to high school in the Palisades. And it was like going out there, and they're like, you know, like you're a writer in the fucking Palisades. Like, I hate to say it, you ain't shit. And then for summer school, I was like behind on class, and they sent me to Fairfax. You know, I went to Fairfax for summer school, and I seen an RTD. It was still the RTD bus. It was before it was the MTA. It was the last year of RTD buses. And I seen a bus. It was the first day of school. A bus pulls up, and everybody walks out. and everybody runs up and just starts mobbing the bus. Everybody. That's like that funny. Thing pulled up crispy fucking clean and it pulled away where you couldn't see it in out of the window.
No way.
And I was like, that's awesome. Damn, this is that was like my I have arrived moment. You know, I was like, this is the shit. Yeah, this is like, what I've been waiting
like
for.
Like the kids in that school, like, you know, they know who they are. I'm not gonna shout them out, but like we were all doing our thing. And it was fun to like all like we were like all together. We're like, wait, you're from Corona. You're from, you know, this name, Jackson Heights. You're from like, you know, Jamaica. Like, and we all just came like you're from Astoria. And we all just kind of came together. And like we would never hang out with each other because we'd all kind of in our own neighborhoods. But then we then it was just, you know, it was kind of dope. Yeah, that's dope. It was a dope experience.
Hell
yeah.
Hell yeah.
What's the craziest thing you ever saw at a party?
I mean, I was at a party one time in a basement where it was like that fucking Seinfeld episode where George Costanza like trampled over all the kids like to get out like of the there was a fire. Like I was at a house party once when somebody bear maced the whole bear maced the whole basement of the party.
Oh, damn.
And it was like 40 people trapped in like bear mace, but my boys used to dabble in you know selling. Various things and I was in a house one night, we were just kicking it and the fucking house got raided and they knocked on the door and we didn't open it and they stuck the fucking little camera under the fucking door with the little
damn,
to see what was going on and my boy had packs of weed in the thing and we like these geniuses think to fucking flush the weed. And it's just like, you can't flush 45 pounds of weed. Like, it was just the craziest. Yeah,
that's wild.
Yeah. In front of his house, I got a gun pulled in my gun pulled on me by the police. I mean, there were so many just hectic fucking, you know, graffiti stories, just like brawls, melees. I remember one time my boy, we were fighting these kids and he had a fucking pool ball in a sock, right?
Damn.
And he used to walk around with it, right? And these guys were like, we were fighting some dudes that were like way out, like we were out of our fucking league. Like these guys were gonna kill us. My boy thought he was ill. He ran up to the dude with the pool ball in the sock. He swings the pool ball in the sock. The pool ball flies out of the sock. My boy turns around. He hits him in the head with a sock. Bro, we were fucked. We were like, dude, I had never got beat so bad. Like, you just hit, the guy turned around like confused. Like, you just hit me with a sock? Like, you got bats. Like, why are you hitting me with a sock right now? But there were so many, like, just hectic fucking, you know, nights that were just, New York was just crazy.
Yeah.
It's like, you'd be at the pizza place at fucking 4 a.m. and it's somebody's, you know, you end up in the sewer with some dude like tussling, like it was, you know,
in the sewer.
I don't even got like one, like there were just a lot of fights, man. You know, a lot of angry, you know, drunken nights and
If you grew up in a certain time, like kind of like around the same, you know, I grew up same time as you did, kind of like parallel fucking, you know, you were in New York, I was here, but it was a lot of the, you know, the same shit. The fucking nightclubs, you know, we were kind of like at the tail end of like nightlife, of like prime fucking nightlife. Yeah. We got to see it like, dude, I remember going to, I don't know if I ever told this story before, but we were at, there's this Club Ronda, which still happens, you know?
And oh, it's
like
a big called Ronda?
Club called Ronda, you know? And dude, it's a fun fucking party, you know? It's like, it's gay, everyone's out, their motherfuckers are wearing whatever. They get great fucking house DJs, you know? And we went to their first party they threw at this club on Hollywood. And we go there, and they had an upstairs and a downstairs. And it was like an old paisa bar, you know? And we go there, and so all the security, and they didn't know what they were like. They rented out the spot, you know?
Yeah.
So they got their bartenders, and they got their security, and like, fools just start pulling up, and they like had never seen anything like this before, you know? And it starts cracking, and we're in there, and the downstairs was like one party, and the upstairs was like a whole other thing, you know? And people are doing fucking, I mean, there was like hundreds of poppers just going, everyone's just hitting fucking poppers and whatever, you know, like there was
Trump banned that shit.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, the Trump
banned poppers.
Like, Rush. One of the first orders of business was that they banned fucking.
I did that shit once. I hit my head against the bar. Shout out to Reza. Aaron Parry gave me a fucking shot, big of pop. He stuck it in my nose and I fucking fell out, boom, hit my head at the I remember exactly when I was like, what the fuck was that?
It was making like it's like hotter than I am right now, and you get a headache.
Yeah,
it's like worse than.
But your asshole's real loose.
Your asshole gets. That's why people use it, because it's a sex thing. I didn't know. I didn't know until I got sober. I'm probably at the log cabin, and somebody's sharing about it, and I go, oh my god. That's why anytime I'm doing poppers, all the gay dudes are like, oh hey. I had no clue.
You're like, I'm cool, man. What are you guys sweating me for?
So we're at this club, and the upstairs
and they sell it
is
like video head cleaner.
Yeah, VHS head cleaner.
But it'll have like a porno brand name on it. It'll be like Brazzers.
You're like,
oh, bro.
So we're at this nightclub and we're upstairs, and then there's a thing downstairs. You know, and downstairs is like whatever fucking, you know, upstairs is like disco fucking, downstairs is like club, electronic, whatever, you know? And like next thing you know, everyone's like, quiet, quiet, shut, like, you know, like a lot of commotion and something's going down and everybody's like, don't move. So the fucking fire marshal came in and they raided the downstairs of the club. And what they did was they locked the upstairs and they were like, oh, it's just the party downstairs. And somehow, some fucking way, and it's like, dude, it's hot as shit. Everyone's like sitting there trying to not fucking move.
High as fuck.
High as fuck. It felt like we were up there for like 2 hours, you know, while like the fire marshal was doing whatever. I don't know how they didn't come up. They were like, what's upstairs, you know? People were like passing out because it was so hot just fucking sitting there, you know? And then like an hour into it, they're like, all right, cool, we're good to party, you know, and the fucking music, the fucking the music comes back on. Yeah,
that's
fucking
wild.
I had a crazy club story. I was at a club and I was meeting my boy. I was coming from the city and it was a club in Queens. And I go there and I'm there before everybody. And I see this girl that I know and I start talking to her, whatever, and I'm kicking it to her. And I'm like, I was like probably like in my 20s. And apparently her boyfriend and her ex-boyfriend and all their boys were at the club, you know, and not apparently, they were there. I actually ended up getting arrested for this afterwards. And they beat the shit out of me, right?
Damn.
They dragged me outside. They beat the shit out of me. Up the block, they all start going back to the club with their shirts off, you know, well, yo, we just fucked up, Paulie, da, da, da. Mind you, my boys were waiting online to get into the club. But a lot more of my boys than they were of them.
Damn.
My boys were like, who'd you just beat up? I texted one of my, I think I had a Nextel chirp. I think I had a chirp. I chirped one of my boys. I'm like, yo, I'm behind a dumpster around the corner. I just got fucked up. My boys were like, we see them. They end up annihilating these dudes.
Hell yeah.
Like, it was like a movie. Like, hell who'd you just beat up? And they were like, word? And then like, yo, like, they just beat up Paul. They ended up fucking getting their, I mean, these kids just got really bad. I ended up becoming the scapegoat because they had scanned my ID because they used to scan your IDs when you went to clubs.
Oh, so shit.
I'm the only ID that they scanned because these kids got beat up so bad, you know, that they didn't scan my boys' IDs yet because nobody went inside.
They didn't make it in,
the only one that got fucking scanned. God. I ended up getting pinched for it. I'm like, I'm the one who got beat up. Like, why did I get fucking?
You're all lumped up. And
yeah. They're like, who did it? I'm like, I don't know, man. Just fucking give me the fucking whatever. And yeah. But it was like a movie. They're like, who'd you just beat up? You idiots. It was so fucking, yeah. But shit like that happened all the time.
Yeah.
And then I remember you were talking a little bit about, like, you were working in the service industry or something. Like, did that come later?
Obviously, I had to get a job because I had to support my fucking Jordan habit and, you know, and my North Face habit and all that other stuff. And I wasn't, like, trying to get arrested for boosting and all that stuff, really. So I ended up, my mother ended up, my mother had a comedy club really long time ago in, like, the 90s. It was pretty well known. It was called Jimmy's Comedy Alley. My grandfather had a bowling alley. My mother converted it into a comedy club. And it was pretty well known in Queens. It was
so
like
big acts were coming through.
Big acts
shit.
Like Andrew Dice Clay performed there, Jon Stewart, Damon Way, everybody. Like you name them, like Kevin James, like the biggest comedians. That was like one of their stops. You
That's
know?
Heavy.
Yeah, it was dope. I knew some of the guys. I still know some of the guys. Like Colin Quinn was really close with my mom, and Dave Attell was really close
Dave.
Yeah, they're like I still talk to Dave once in a while. Like it's the best. Like, and then she had got me a gig when I was like 18 as like a barback. And I bar backed at the comedy club in Manhattan.
It was in Manhattan.
Yeah, so that was kind of perfect because I get to.
Oh, she
you
got
know,
you on not at her spot. She got you on in the
no,
city.
No, no, no. It was her. No, she had and she already had closed her shop, so she ended up general managing a new club.
Okay.
In Manhattan, and then I would bar back there, and then I ended up becoming bartender, and I pick up shifts, and I'd you know all that stuff, and learn the whole you know hospitality world. You know, it was a comedy club, so it wasn't like real hospital. It wasn't like you go into a fine dining restaurant.
Right,
it was a bunch of fucking degenerate comedians
holding
down the bar. You know, but that was pretty dope. I worked there for quite some time, and that was just a great experience because it was like the illest dudes in comedy, and you really earn your bones of like you know breaking balls. Because I loved breaking balls.
Clown,
I
mean,
like you know, it was yeah. It
you
was,
must have heard some of the illest.
Oh,
shit
it was
in
so
there.
Much fun. And they all were like, "Oh, you should be a comedian." I'm like, "Dude, to do like to do what they do is like I give them so much credit because they go they in the beginning they all grind, dude. It's like they're holding fucking doors open for people to get like 5 minutes on stage. You know, a lot of them are really well known now. Like some of these guys, like Andrew Schultz and all that, they had to go through the they had to go outside and. Street in New York and like talk to you probably seen it when you go to New York. You want to go to a comedy club? You want to go to a comedy club?
Yeah, flyering
like the
and
barkers
all that
and shit.
Yeah.
Like, dude, that's fucking like grunt work. Like, you in New York? Like, fuck off, dude. I ain't fucking going to a comedy club or whatever. And I was like, I can't do what you do. Like, I'm not doing that. So that was kind of dope, like, to just do that. And I'm still friends with a lot of the guys today, and they're really well known. And
so you're doing that at night, but during the day or early in the evening, you're fucking around or your night's off or whatever.
Yeah. I grew up with, a lot of my family suffered from the disease. Very Irish Italian. We love to eat and drink. A lot of yelling. Not a lot of talking about. We weren't talking about feelings much. You know, we weren't like, oh, I'm sad. Like, get the fuck out. And they kind of operated like, if you make it to work on Monday, you're good. Like, you're not. You don't got a problem. You don't got a problem. And I see my mom with my dad in and out of the program. You know, they were in NA. I had a lot of those. A lot of those white NA keychains laying around the house just for today. You know, they really tried. You know, and. I was just like, it ran in my, you know, I don't know if it's genetics or whatever, but that's all I knew. We were drinking and like, even on family events, like I could go back and rewatch the movie now. And I'm like, oh, that's what they were doing. Like they were in the bathroom, during Christmas and that they were hitting the bag. Like, I was like, oh, all right. Like, so, you know, it was like alcohol and booze were, you know, booze and all that shit was like in my family and like it wasn't a thing. So it was just, you know, you make it to work on Monday, you're all right. You know, and I operated like that.
That's a big thing with New Yorkers, just push through.
Yeah.
They push through anything.
Yeah.
But I think it's because you're like, it's just a linear family, you know, like generational, like, because they were all immigrants in the beginning. So they're just used to hard times. Like,
yeah, you know, and I was fucking, you know, there was chaos around me, you know. My family, my mom and dad put me through a lot of shit. And, you know, I was just trying to quiet the noise. I heard somebody speak one night and they were like a little bit of shush. That's what they were calling the addiction. Like a little bit, I needed a little bit of shush. And that's kind of, I needed to just fucking disconnect, you know. And, in the schoolyard and the booze and all the other shit and weed and all the other drugs that we were doing, ecstasy, all the fun. Because I caught the, like, luckily for me, I caught the, I caught the tail end of the club scene, the real club scene in New York.
Yeah.
So like I caught the Peter Gation.
I caught
shit.
The tunnel, the limelight, all that shit. So I was like 17, 18 in there, like
seeing
the craziest shit. And they were like, let us in because we kind of knew the door, whatever. We were sneaking in. And so we caught like the tail before cell phones even existed. So that was kind of crazy. So that was like, we caught the tail end of that. And that was an experience, like, because you grow up quick when you start seeing that shit.
When did it start going dark? Was that not until you moved here?
Nah, it got dark I don't know exactly when the club started really dying down. Like, listen, there were times, like, I was still going to the club when it was bottle service and all that stuff. But like the real like those kind of clubs, like the limelights and the tunnels and all that shit, where they just let everybody in, and it was like skaters hanging out with like ravers and ravers hanging out with like, you know, everything. It was just like gay,
drag queens,
it was just like nobody gave a shit. Those were dope. That was like the best times of my life. Like just going out and, you know, you stumble out of there at 5 a.m. And then where's the after hours? And you're going to like some fucking, you know, somebody's opening up the, you know, the gates in front of the deli. You know, they're like, it's down there. And you're like walking past like a fucking walk-in freezer into like a back room, you know? Yeah. So
that was
wild. Dope.
There was only one spot like that I ever went to in L.A. was El Centro in Hollywood.
Uh-huh, yeah.
The whole fucking club is painted black. I was taken there by some people I knew from Hollywood who were partying with. And I was on Prop 36 at the time, raging. I thought I had a warrant out. I'm like, fuck it, whatever. And it's like the sun's up. You're doing drugs. And you like walk over to McDonald's, get some food, go back over there, keep doing drugs and drinking. And then I got a call from Tarzana Treatment Center. They're like, yo, we're going to violate you if you don't get back over here and get back in the fucking. I was like, damn. But yeah, people doing drugs and drinking in broad daylight.
Yeah, it was crazy. You walk out of there,
patio
and
shit.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, it was fun. It was a good time. I think early 2000s when the real like those kind of clubs ended up like the tunnel closed, the limelight closed, and like they tried to keep it open, but then it turned into bottle service in New York, and that kind of fucking ruined nightlife.
Yeah,
you know, everybody.
It ruined it here. I mean, it fucking ruined it.
You know what is so crazy apparent? Like, I was staying at that new hotel in Vegas, the Resorts World or whatever. Bitchin' place, and they had a club, right? And they're like, oh yeah. So I was like, I had business with one of the stores in the mall there, and they were like, yeah, we'll put you on the day club to go to the pool and check it out. And I went into the club, and you can't fucking sit down unless you buy a bottle.
Yeah,
you can't lay on a fucking lounge.
No way.
I swear to God, they've monetized finding a spot to kick back.
Yeah, that's why Vegas is on the decline right now.
Yeah,
I mean, it's kind of getting people don't want to fucking pay the money for these. you know, they tried to cater to that crowd, and it was just kind of...
I mean, imagine, like, you can't go to a fucking pool and lay on a lounge chair. No. You know what I mean? You just paid how much money to get inside. The only thing you could do without arranging something with the waitress is sit on the edge of the pool, put your fucking legs in the pool.
So Reno's in like a pink flamingo floating.
Yeah, that guy. Yeah. Everybody knows you're the...
Smoking a Parliament, like, fuck this place.
A Capri. Yeah, it's weird because it kind of... like, you see that kind of happened with nightlife here. Yeah. And that's kind of been the decline with bars, too, was, like, with COVID especially, right on the back end of it. And I have, you know, we have friends that are in that world where people got to see, like, not going out and going out, like, and hanging out with their friends and getting drunk or pre-drinking or going out to whatever. They're like, oh, I don't have to go and spend all this fucking money going to the fucking bar to do this, you know?
Yeah.
And if they go, and, like, the other thing that happened is everybody started, like, now you're in a fucking group chat with all your homies and you could just talk shit in the fucking group chat where before you would have to go to the bar. You would have to go out and see all, like...
Dude, I talk to young kids all the time, like, that work for me or whatever, and I'm like, what do you do? Like, they're like, dude, I go on these apps. I meet a chick and I eat a gummy and we call it a day. Like, also, they don't want to be, like, drunk. Like, no, none of these kids don't want to be, like, they don't want to be wasted on video, like, hungover. Like, they're like, I have a chick come over and I eat a gummy and we're, it's like easy now. Like, we don't have to go to the bars and do all that shit and spend money. And it's like, you know, obviously there's some bars that are still rocking and everything, but a lot of that is, like, just some kids fucking smoking cigarettes.
Like, we were in Vancouver, like, at the World Convention, me and Danny, and remember Jason was telling us there's all these, like, non-alcoholic liquor stores.
Uh-huh.
Oh, no Vancouver. Shit.
Yeah.
What does that look like?
It's just all, you know, like...
Bunch of Celsius?
Yeah, no, the spirits.
Oh, zero proof,
But like a full liquor store, that shit.
Yeah. Which we had them here, but they just went under, you know? Because here's the thing, it's like, with the you know, it sounds great. You're like, oh, like, let's give some people a place to hang out. But the fucking reason you keep getting drinks at a bar isn't because they fucking taste good. You know, you're not like, oh, this is delicious.
Coffee.
It's like, yeah, that's true. Yeah. No, it's funny, when I was in Mallorca for this work thing, and I was staying in this badass, like, hotel right on the water, and they were like, you know, wait on you hand and foot, and I would come in at the end of my work day, and they were like, oh, can I get you? Yeah, they were making me a zero proof gin and ginger ale, just big old fucking icy joint, you know, kind of like you see people drinking the fucking Negronis when they're in Italy or whatever. I mean, it's nice. The little non-alcoholic thing is kind of nice, but and I heard it's putting a dent in real alcohol sales.
Alcohol sales are down bad.
Because what Paulie was saying, I've heard this. These young kids aren't, drinking's not that popular.
Yeah.
Like, all the studies are coming out how bad it is. I mean, look how shitty we felt.
Yeah.
Like, look how shitty we looked. Like, I don't want to look like shit.
Look
like,
how shitty someone
I don't
want
to look like my dad. My dad's an alcoholic. He looks awful.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, they don't want to do it anymore. They got to get it. And there's all these studies, and you look on fucking Instagram, and it's like this guy talking about, you know, all these, it's like these kids are kind of getting, they're, you know, it's.
Yeah, all the studies tell you just even like 5 drinks a week. You're just like, it's fucking. And takes 10, 15 years off your life or whatever. Yeah, we all know, right? We've been in rehab a million fucking times. You've studied all the different things about all the different drugs, right? Heroin, cocaine, speed, benzos, whatever. Alcohol just fucking melts you from the inside.
Yeah.
And when you get addicted to it, like really addicted to it, you are fucking continuously drinking alcohol all day. Yeah. Like, I remember when we were at CRLA, do you remember that one dude, Wayne, that did all the work on the houses? He was like, kind of like, looking like Paulie, but he was like 5'1", just old school ex-contractor. He came in a wheelchair, screaming maniacal, fucking yelling at everybody, couldn't walk.
Yeah.
6 months later, he was like the fucking, like the staff contractor.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like, dude, it just levels you. It fucking levels you. Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. So you got into like the industry, right? Like you were doing something with like Frank 151 at some point or something?
No, I was doing club promoting and I was doing parties in New York and I was doing all that shit. And I was just a man about town, you know, just getting into shit and knew everybody. I was just running around. I would be at this bar. I kind of knew it was popping. And I ended up, one of my buddies ended up becoming a rapper. And I was like, yo, you got to do this shit full time. I was like, yo, let's do it. I was kind of helping him. You know, I put the battery in his back a little bit. I mean, he had the drive and the initiative to do it, but we kind of did it together. I was like his mouthpiece. Like he had ended up getting a manager. I think Dante Ross was on this podcast. Oh, so Dante ended up managing him for a little bit.
Dante's pod. Yeah, I was like, here's another New York cat, dude. Yeah. You know what I mean? That's cool.
And then I ended up, he's like, when he's not on the road, I needed a gig because if he ain't making money, I ain't making money. And I kind of stopped bartending, and the club shit was like, what? It was like here and there. And so I ended up working for Frank 151 for a while.
Which was a magazine,
It was a magazine and like a content. It was like it was ahead of its time. It was trying to do YouTube stuff. It was trying to do all this stuff, but nobody was really on it yet. It was like a weird
media organization.
It could have been huge right now if we would have did it the right way, I think. But
that's dope.
Yeah, and everybody was really talented in like their own Nick Ace and all these other people. And so I did that for like 2 years. Jamie Story was there, who did, you know, a lot of cool things in music. And so I did that for a long time, and I did events for them, and we did a lot of cool projects with like hip hop and, you know, art and culture. And,
yeah, I remember. And I kinda
made a lot of connections, you know, and it was just like out there, like it kind of. And I also put all the connections that I made throughout the years to like use, because I was like, oh, I know this guy. Yeah. Like, we should get him to do the project or this, you know. So
Yeah. So you were having a good time doing that.
I did have a great time doing that. Yeah.
To rewind for a minute though, the like the club scene with like Limelight, the Tunnel, what's the wildest shit you ever saw go down in one of them joints?
Damn, I don't know, man. There was some crazy.
It could be any category.
One.
It could be like wild violent. It could be wild.
Honestly,
funny.
If I could remember, I wish I remembered, because I was, you know, we were. It was blurry, but. I mean, I seen like performance, like I seen some of like DMX, and like I've seen like randomly, like on a Tuesday night, like you go into a spot and all of a sudden it's like Mobb Deep on stage, like it was like that type of stuff. It was dope. I mean, I don't really know, like the craziest thing, probably some crazy sex shit that was just going crazy, like right in the middle of the right in the open, like. But I don't know anything, you know. I've seen, but I also have seen shootouts, you know, straight up like Wild Wild West, fucking, you know, right in the middle of the street. So, I mean, there was tons of,
Dante was telling us when he took Booyah Tribe to New York, and he took him to, it might have been the Limelight.
Yeah, probably.
But some dudes like shot out the fucking fish tanks at some
place.
Yeah,
sure, yeah.
But he said like everybody just run like crazy with the Booyah Tribe just standing there.
Yeah, like what's the big deal? Yeah. Those guys are different. Yeah. Shout out to the Booyah Tribe. Yeah.
Aren't those dudes from like Hawaiian Gardens or something?
They're from here, right? Carson.
Big Samoan. Yeah. Those guys
Dude, it's so fun. Like, because, you know, like our gang culture was so huge that everybody was like, everybody had beefs. Nobody ever seemed to have a beef with them.
Nah, those guys were,
They're
those
like,
guys were
pass.
Yeah, nope, not happening.
They were wild.
Because, you know, I don't know who, somebody was trying to make Eminem check in.
Yeah.
Like, but when he came to L.A.
Yeah.
And then, but he was tied with the Booyah Tribe, and them dudes were like,
I just seen a clip of his first show in New York at Tramps, and I was there. Wow. And I'm in the front row. Yeah, I was at the first. Yeah, I used to really be into underground hip hop. So I used to listen to Stretch and Bobbito all the time.
Yeah.
And those Stretch is my guy. I love Stretch. And I used to Thursday nights, I used to like record the show. And Eminem, kind of broke Eminem, and they had a show at. They announced a show that he was having at Tramps, which is not there anymore. Tramps and Wetlands were the two music venues. And I was probably 19. I was in the front row in a backpack. I had a backpack on. Like, and I was fucking like 555 Soul hoodie, like, you know, tribal gear or some shit. I had a spray paint can on my shirt. And I was fucking, and I seen the clip, and I was like, yo, I was at that show. It was the Outsider. It was sick. I just can't believe it.
Savage then, too? Yeah.
Oh, he was even crazy. He was crazy. He came out on a white tee and was just fucking... it was sick.
That's dope.
That's badass. Yeah.
So when did you move here?
I moved here like 10 years ago. 10 years ago, I moved here. I was burnt out in New York.
But you're friends with Sean B and all
I'm
that.
I'm sure, yeah. I was like... Yeah. I have a lot of friends that moved here previously.
Yeah.
Like my boy Hobbs lives here. He opened up Supreme on Fairfax. Yeah. That was one of my good friends.
I love Hobbs.
So I was traveling out here a lot because Frank had offices here on Beverly. So I would travel out here a lot and work out here. And I come out here for like weeks at a time. And I had a good little circle of guys, like New Yorkers. And I kind of seen like, you know, that kind of put the bug in my ear like, oh, these guys could do it. Like, and they're all like real New Yorkers like me. And I ended up meeting my wife at like a house party in Venice one night.
Before you even lived here?
Before I lived here, yeah. We kept we did a little long distance thing.
That's dope.
Yeah.
She's cool. I like her too.
Yeah, she's the best. And she, I think it was like February, and it was pretty. Like just burnt. I had like 5 jobs, bro. I was fucking cooked, and I couldn't afford rent. It was just, you know, I was living in a shoebox.
Damn.
You know, I was also just going out 6 nights a week. I was just fucking a disaster. And it was -15 degrees in New York. And it was like, I haven't seen my friends in like 2 months because nobody talks about like February in New York's the dreariest time. Yeah, like, because it's just right? brutal. Like, it ain't Christmas time and shit. That's nice. It snows. Like, February is just like fucking wet, just cold, dark, and darkness and sadness. And I she sent me a selfie. And it was 80 degrees in LA.
Damn.
And I was like, what the fuck am I doing? I'm out of here. And I came there. I came here. She met me at the airport. And, you know, love was sparked. And she was like, kind of, why don't you move out here? I kind of went home. I kind of put some shit in storage, put some shit in a duffel bag. I came. And I ended up moving in with her in her little tiny apartment that she kind of grew out of already. Like, she was already grown out of it. And I moved in. Like, a fucking 30-year-old alcoholic that snores, you know? And she's like, you know, and she was just like, you know, she kind of believed in me. And, you know, I got with the right group of people. And it was just, you know, yeah. I've been here for
That's
10
righteous.
Yeah, and it kind of
What
worked.
Were you doing for a living first? Still working at Frank 151?
I was still working at 151. Keith Huffnagel, rest
yeah.
in peace,
oh, yeah.
he hired me to work at Huff. Also, so I was working at Huff with Chris Garcia. So I was really yeah. close with Chris Garcia.
Where was the Huff store in L.A.?
Fairfax?
It wasn't open on Fairfax. I was doing marketing for him because he was about to open up a New York store.
Oh, no, okay.
And he wanted
to. He had the SF store.
He wanted to do more things in New York because Keith is from there and he kind of wanted to tap into New York. So they hired me to be like boots on the ground, seed product. Like, your boy, you're in the mix. Like, send somebody like some weed socks. Like, and all that shit.
That weed sock blew up.
Yeah, shout out to Honey. Honey designed that.
The weed, it was just a Huff sock with a
with
weed
the weed leaves on it.
Yeah. Yeah. They knocked it off a million times.
Yeah.
So did you know Mega from over there too?
Oh, Black's
Mega.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I knew Mega and Alfred. And Mega's from SF. Yeah, that's my guy. So I was bouncing back and forth, and then I was working for Huff, and then they like, well, we hired you to be the New York guy, and you're in LA now, so they clipped me. So I was like, fuck. I'm like, you're right. All right, fair enough. But Chris Garcia was like really like Chris Garcia Sponto. You know, my boy Steven Arroyo, like, unfortunately...
You know what's weird? Yeah. All three of them dudes are dead.
Yeah, that's really... It's tragic, yeah. really. Yeah. I mean...
Rest in peace,
I mean,
man.
Yeah, it's a bummer.
It's really... It's... yeah. But those are really my guys. Like, because Sponty used to come to New York. And... Sponty used to come to New York and with Two Tone. And they used to go out. And we used to all fucking go nuts together
yeah.
when everybody was out there.
Yeah.
So I had, like, a network of people in L.A., you know?
You were like the guy they checked in with when
yeah,
they were on
like
their
when,
way
what's popping like when Nick Diamond would come out there to New York with Chad Shoes,
yeah.
they'd be like, "What club are we going to tonight?" I'd be like, "Yo, we're going here." And Nick would buy like a million bottles because he was fucking
yeah,
a billionaire
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'd fucking make a commission on the side from whoever fucking
nice.
Whatever club we went to.
There
I was fucking hustling, dude.
There you go.
So yeah, I moved out here. The Huff clipped me, and I was just trying to figure it out. And I kind of I did some odd shit, odds and ends here, but then I had the idea for the sandwich shop. And
nice. Nice.
That's so, did you have any experience in sandwiches?
I ate them. No, like, okay, so I worked in the service industry. I worked in restaurants along, as I was, like, in New York, I was working fucking, I did the front of the house, I bartended, I managed
okay.
restaurants. Like, I was working all, remember when I said I had 5 jobs?
Yeah.
Like, I was all over the place. I was show my resume. And I kind of knew, like, I would be, like, out partying with, like, a fucking GM one night. I'd be like, you hiring? I'd be like, yeah, come in tomorrow. I'd be like, all right, yeah. I'm a maitre d' all of a sudden. It didn't last very long. So I was working in the service industry for a long time. Like, I knew customer service. I knew, you know, what I expected from people. And I grew up around, it was me and my partner, John Buscemi.
Yeah.
He was my guy. And he was like, I want to work with you. I don't want you to work for me. Because John had a really successful shoe brand. And he made a lot of money in it. And I think he had just sold it. But he's like, I don't want to hire you to work for this shit.
Oh, he sold it?
Yeah. At the time around.
He sold that quite a while ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's one of my guys coming up in the footwear game. That,
yeah.
He was like a few steps ahead of me when I was just starting out. And fucking incredible dude.
And we had, as cheesy as it sounds, it's not fake. It's like we ended up having lunch and having a sandwich over lunch, like for lunch, me and him on like the hood of his car. And we were like, yo, we should like open up like an East Coast style sandwich shop like out here. Like there's nothing really like, there is like, obviously there's places to go to get sandwiches, but there was nothing like.
Bay Cities was in.
Bay
huh?
Cities was kind of in. I'm not driving to Santa Monica at 2 p.m. You got to be on crack.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like who's like 40, like
totally.
It's like an hour and 45 minutes. So I was like,
totally.
I can't get a good, like Largemont Wine and Cheese was good, but it wasn't something I grew up on. And we kind of wanted to like, you know, and I went to one place. I can't forget this. I asked the girl, I was like, I'm not to say it was some LA shit, but it was like, it was some LA shit. Like, the girl was like, I'm like, how's the chicken salad sandwich? She's like, I don't know. I don't eat chicken. And I'm like, can you fucking lie to me and tell me that it's fantastic? Like, and I'm like, this is the am I on a fucking hidden camera show right now? I'm like, this can't be like where I'm coming to get sandwiches. Like, no. I gotta know the person behind the counter's name. Like, sure, you go to like Boyle Heights, you go to Lincoln High, like all these neighborhoods, they have the great sandwich shops. But like where I was, it was just very pretentious. And I was like, I gotta open up a sandwich shop that's like kind of like a place where you know your customer's name. Yo, Keith, how was the game last night?
Yeah.
I know your order, which you the regular, you want the usual Reno?
Yeah.
That type of shit. Like, I wanted that. I wanted to community.
Yeah,
right?
Fucking A.
And there's enough people from Chicago, Boston, Philly, Miami that missed that like rapport with the fuck, you know, with, you know, and I we opened up a sandwich shop. We were like, we're not going to reinvent the wheel. We're going to keep it classic. We're not going to be too foodie with it, all this extra shit. We're just going to use good product, good produce, good bread, and just knock out of the park with quality sandwiches. And it translated well enough where people kind of got it. And they were like, you know what? This place is fucking pretty good. And they kept coming back.
Incredible. You know what's funny? I'm going to take you there someday. You know, I'm from Covina.
Mm-hmm.
He just reminded me, like, but this dude Keith that we grew up with, he owns them now, but his grandfathers, they're called Claro's. They're only in the San Gabriel Valley.
No, yeah, people always fucking, they always tag me on it. It was fire.
And dude, they're fucking great. But like, you know, they just sewed up the San Gabriel Valley. It's like Temple City, Covina, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And there's a fucking, it's kind of like Uncle Paul. There's a line through it. You know what I mean?
That's
like,
amazing.
And it's for people like you, because it's like every goddamn Italian fucking, you know, pepper or anything you want to buy in jars.
Yeah.
You know, little snacks.
Stuff, you know.
Like,
you go to the beach and you want a little, little stuff to nosh on or whatever. You know, I'm a sandwich fan. And at the end of the day, there's tons of great sandwich shops in LA. People always say, no, you like this? I'm like, I love them all, dude. It's like,
dude, a sandwich is probably my favorite food. I'm not bullshitting you. Or a chocolate chip cookie.
And I just wanted some community, like somewhere you could hold core. People come from New York, they want to come to LA. You want to come pop in, see your friends. You know, before you go to the beach, you come through.
Yeah.
Soccer mom running late for home. Fucking can't feed her. You know, doesn't want to cook. Grab some sandwiches.
Yeah,
that type of shit. And it's been good, man.
And you leaned in a little bit on the merch and shit with John.
Well, yeah,
because
I worked in street.
Like,
you know, I obviously worked for brands, and I did not know that I was going to create like a whole other aspect of the business. That wasn't like a goal. The goal was to make a dope logo.
Yeah.
And you know, shout out to Jamal Skypager. You know, shout out to Jamal. Jamal created he's a dope sign painter. He created my logo, and you know, we came out one T-shirt. It did really well, man. People loved
Hats. The hats went off.
The hats went crazy. Dude, it was like in fucking Vogue.
They still go crazy.
Something like that, right?
No, it was like, all types of shit.
The hat to have.
It's the first fucking hat anybody was running from a food place.
Well, you said it, not me.
I mean, everybody does it now, but like. I'd be at work if fucking camera guys got it. Fucking art, like they were everywhere. Yeah,
it was awesome. Yeah, it was really. I tapped into like this whole new subculture. Now it's like a whole thing. Like they have fucking festivals, family style. And there's like, yo, we're doing food and merch collab. Like I'm like, yeah.
How are you?
They didn't call me this year. Shit.
That's wild, man. Do you have any idea how many hats you did that banner year, or has it gotten
bigger
every year?
You know, honestly, once Travis Scott was my neighbor at my shop. Like that was the homie. He used to come in the shop all the time. He ended up just grabbing like 5 hats one day because him and Chase, he lived off of Beverly, my old shop. He lived there. In one of those like fucking, you know, those
apartments. Yeah.
No, like the McMansions, you know, when they build the shitty gray ones that they're up everywhere, you know?
They're awful.
They look like a fucking spaceship. He lived in one of them, and he would come through the back alley, he would say, what up, whatever. He'd come in, get a turkey sandwich, and he grabbed 5 hats one day. And this is right when he was about to pop, and he wore it everywhere. He wore it performing at, you know, this fucking concert. He wore it on the sidelines of the courtside seats when the Houston Rockets were in the finals. He was with Kylie.
That's
like kind of, and he has a photo of him standing. And then he wore it at the Astros World Series Day parade.
Oh, damn.
And it was just, and then all the kids loved Travis Scott. Yeah. And it was just like, that one created a whole other monster.
It's so wild that kids fucking go nuts for that dude.
So yeah, we had no idea that and it just created a monster. And now we still do merch, we do collabs, and you know, but when I do stuff, I want it to be thoughtful and fun and, you know,
intentional. Yeah.
Intentional. But like, we only started, like, I was inspired by like the tow truck t-shirts.
Yeah.
With the number and the address and shit, like the Hard Rock Cafe. And that was my inspiration. It was like that type of shit. Like, those are timeless fucking pieces. Like, I love a fucking Bob's Refrigeration, like, t-shirt, you know? With a, like, nifty little, with a witty little tagline. Like, we're cool, yo, some shit, you know? And that's kind of how I treated my, like, and I just, we just designed shit that we'd wear.
Yeah. That one that you sent me is like a Jerky Boys. Did you do that with the Jerky Boys?
Yeah.
No shit.
Yeah.
What's his name again?
Johnny Brennan.
Yes.
Oh, you know them dudes?
No, I fucking was a grew up on them, and I was just like, dude, I gotta do a Jerky. Like the Jerky Boys, and I ended up going down a wormhole one night, and I was listening to old Jerky Boys cackling in the other room. Like I'm trying to put my wife onto it, and she's like, "What is this? Like, what's wrong with you?" And it's like, so I DM'd him, and I was like, "Dude, I'm a huge fan. I would love to do a collab with you." And he's like, "Yeah, talk to my manager." His manager ends up hitting me up. His manager knew my mom from the comedy world because he's a comedian now, Chris Mazzilli, who's a big comedy manager. And he's like, "I knew your mom." I'm like, what the fuck? I'm like, this is like fate. And then next thing you know, we like, I'm like, "I want to do this t-shirt and do a sandwich with you." And I have all the edits. Like I got to release them one day, like all like the ones that we didn't drop. Like I had him like call in the shop. Like, yeah, it's just Frank Rizzo. I want a sandwich. Paulie said it could be. And it was just like a passion project, you know? I didn't think anybody was going to get it. But, it's
where
fun.
Where did you air that? On Instagram?
Yeah, it's on Instagram. Fuck, yeah, I'll send it to you. Shit. Yeah, it's fun.
I fucking love the Jerky Boys.
Yeah, just even talking to him on the phone, I was tripping. He's like, "Paulie, what do you want to do?" And I'm like, "Oh, God." I'm like, "This is fun." I'm like, "You don't even." I call my boy Mike, who does all like my graphics and shit. And like, he's like, everything you see, like forward facing from Uncle Paulie's, he handles. And I was like, "Dude, I was just on the phone with this guy. I couldn't believe that I'm talking to like."
He's like,
and you can hear Frank Rizzo coming out. He's like, "These fucking guys last weekend." I'm like, "Oh." It was fucking great. Yeah. It was such a fun thing. It was fun to be able to do shit like that.
That's,
you know?
So great. All right, wait. So let's rewind. Before pre-Uncle Polly's, you move out here.
Yep. Pull the geographic.
Geographic, you know, yeah. Where does it, you know, because the show is called It's All Bad.
Yeah.
Where does it, you know, so you're moving out here.
Yeah.
You're in the little apartment, you know.
Yeah. No, like, I got my life together. Yeah, but I didn't have a crazy story. It was the Tuesday afternoon, and I was just like, I can't do this anymore. You know what I mean? I was a high-functioning, you know, alcoholic, and I was just, it's nothing worse than that, because you check all the boxes.
Yeah.
Like, I did this, I did that, I did this. Well, I deserve that. I deserve this. And I was just kind of like, you know, I wasn't, I like to say the car looked clean, but the engine was filthy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's how I really felt. I felt like, you know, inside, I wasn't right with myself. I wasn't right with, you know,
God,
I wasn't right with everything. And I was a father, you know, and a husband. And, you know, I had people that loved me, and I wasn't used to that. I wasn't used to like having people that actually gave a shit.
The
like,
chaos is comfortable, but like love and calmness and all that is like,
and I'm an only child. And I was just like, kind of like fucking, I lived that way, it was a Tuesday afternoon, and I was just like, I'm fucking done, dude. I had like a white light moment. I really had one, and I was just like, they're like, you're done, dude. You had a good run. Hang your jersey in the rafters. Nobody's telling you don't qualify for this shit. But I had a misconception. Like I always say, AA needs, a lot of people say it, AA needs a PR fucking, because all you need is the desire to stop, to want to stop. Like, it's not like, you don't have to drive your car off a cliff. Like, I thought that because I grew up with my parents, like, rock bottoms, and my uncle's rock bottoms, and all my friends' rock bottoms, and I didn't have a rock bottom like that. I was like, I just wanted to stop this shit. Like, I wanted to stop living in this crazy cycle of, you know, drinking, hungover, like, putting a Band-Aid on it, da-da-da-da-da, and the constant insanity that I was living. It was just like, I was allergic to this shit. I didn't have the same reaction that everybody else did. And I kind of was like, dude, I'm fucking, I went through hell with my parents. I went through hell. They fucked me up. You know what I mean? I don't, you know, blame them for anything, whatever. But like, I was fucked up in the head. And I had a daughter. And I was just like, what am I going to do? Like, I can't do this to her. Like, I want to be available. I want to be, you know, and I'm like, I'm fucking done. Made a phone call. Called a homie and was just like, dude, I'm just fucking done with it. And they, you know, luckily I got around a bunch of guys that, you know, didn't give me suggestions. They gave me direction. Because I don't take suggestions.
Yeah.
I take your suggestions and I throw them out the fucking window.
Yeah.
I need to be told what to do. And I treated the program like I treated me going out. Like I went out, I went 0 to 100. I was gone. You know what I'm saying? I was going out for one cocktail. Like, what are you, crazy? I'm not even going to go out.
Yeah.
I go out for 10, you know? Yeah. And when I came into, like, when I made that, when I had that moment of desperation and I made that fucking, you know, that like that vow of myself, like I'm done. I treated the program one like 0 to 100. Like I'm gonna do this shit. Like yeah. I'm done. Like if I'm gonna do this, I'm not gonna do this. Like I don't want to drink coffee and smoke cigarettes. I could do that on a Tuesday, like on a Wednesday. I want to really do the work and get into the program and really show me how to do this shit.
You gotta chase this shit like you chased the bag.
Exactly. You know? And I fucking just threw myself into it. The miracles happen. The spiritual experiences happen one after another. You know
amazing.
What I mean? Like
amazing.
Boom, 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 boom. And yeah. I was like, oh fuck. And I got around a bunch of guys that I fucking, you know, like you guys. I got in, you know, and I seen the lights on, you know, and I was like, I want what they got, you know, and she's it's like all the cliche sayings. I could say them all day because it's true.
You also already were kind of in the mix with all the like Supreme dudes that are sober.
Yeah,
and all that.
But not really, like, you know, but I didn't really at first I didn't even call it. Like I didn't call anybody that I really initially knew. Like because I didn't want to be like the dog on the side of the highway. Like, yeah. I couldn't deal with the phone calls. Because I'm still Paulie, tough guy, you know. I don't need this shit, you know, whatever. Like, I couldn't deal with, like, everybody calling. Are you okay?
Right.
Like, motherfucker, I'm fine. Shut up. Like, I had, like, a core group of dudes that I was, you know, I would go to, like, men's meetings with and stuff. And I, you know, I did the work, bro. And it was the best thing I ever did, dude.
It's wild, man. Miracles really do happen. Like you can't get freedom from this shit.
You don't hear anybody saying they regret getting sober, man. Yeah. It was like, I had a good run, bro. Hang my jersey in the rafters. Like when it's funny. It's like when you date a girl that's like, or a guy that's an asshole or a cunt or whatever. I'm sorry I said that word, wifey, but you know what I'm saying? And like you break up with them and then your friends are like, yeah, they sucked anyway. You know what I mean? That's kind of when I was like, yeah, I'm done drinking. I'm getting sober. Like, yeah, you sucked. You sucked. Yeah. Like, yeah. It was like, kind of like, yeah, dude, that's exactly where you belong. Like, you shouldn't have been with her anyway. Like, because, you know, and yeah, I just stayed in the middle of this shit and I'm fucking, you know, that's it.
I saw Paulie show up I didn't see him in a little while and I see him show up at, you know, at a meeting and he walks up, he goes, yo, what up? He's like, what can I do? You know, like literally the first thing, he was like, all right, you need me to read some shit. What the fuck can I help out with? Whatever, you know, like right off the bat. Like 1 month in. Yeah, you did.
I didn't want to socialize, dude. I didn't want to come here and be like in like a, I didn't want to go to the meet. Like I didn't want to go meet friends.
Yeah.
Like I wanted to like get better, dude. I didn't feel good. Like I didn't feel good. And I was like, what did you do to feel better? Because I don't need to. So like, yes, I met the guys and whatever, you know, did all that shit. But like, that's not the main goal. Why I didn't just go to meetings to go to meetings. I went to go to meetings to like, you know,
get the tools
and hear the fucking, you know, and in the beginning, I listened to a lot of like what not to do. Like a lot of the guys that come up and they're like, yeah, I had 14 years and I went out. Like, what'd you do? Why'd you go out? And then they'll be like, oh, I was just drifted away and I didn't do this.
Stop going to meetings.
And I'm like, oh, that's what I'm not going to do. All right. Yeah. Thank you. I'll put that because I know what to do.
Yeah.
Because it's pretty fucking easy. Yeah. I mean, not for nothing. It's 164 pages. Yeah. And us fucking four idiots did it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, it's really like, it's not fucking right. It's not like, it's not fucking, you know, physics.
No.
It's really, it's, I'm fascinated by the whole process.
Yeah.
I'm like in awe of how, and I get mad at myself because, you know, people talk about the promises and all this stuff. Like the peace and serenity I get every night when I hit that pillow, that's the promises for me. Like I was living in such chaos and such anxiety and such, you know, fear and fear of being successful, fear of this, fear of like, you know, I'm not used to having a family and money and people relying on me and all this shit. That was a whole other thing. And, you know, the peace I have, that's like, whew. Like I met James, our friend James, you know, and I seen him in an alleyway. We were still sober, don't worry. But it was, I think I had like 6 months, and I was like, he was like, how you doing? And I'm like, I don't know, I'm kind of bored. And he was like, dude, that's how you're supposed to feel. You're not supposed to live like in chaos. That's peace. Like you have peace right now. And I'm like, oh, that's what that is. I was just fucking bored, dude.
But
like,
we equate that.
Nah, dude.
Yeah,
like, you don't got to wake up in the morning and like, what did I say last night or whatever, or, you know, my wife or this or that. And it was just the best thing I've ever done, you know, and I just threw myself in this shit.
I like what you were saying because it's weird. I've been working on that lately. I've been praying like to let people love me, you know?
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I'm an only child and like, you know, like my mom did her best, but you know, I had a weird fucking childhood or whatever, but I've been really focusing on that. Yeah. Like letting like, cause I'll date some woman. I was married one, but like I'll shut down. You know what I mean? Cause I always think they're going to leave and that's what I've been working on lately. Yeah.
Yeah, my mom died. My mom died from the disease. You know, I lost her because of the disease. My dad, I lost my dad for fucking 15 years because of it.
He's sober now, though.
Yeah, he's sober now, but I lost him like for 15 years, bro. Like he was fucking gone. And you know, he's pretty institutionalized. You know,
he did 15 years straight, right?
Yeah, and then my mom fucking she ended up you know passing away from an overdose.
I lost my sister. You know? Too.
Dude, your dad's so great.
Yeah. And I you know I'm like you know I'm not becoming them, but I'm becoming like I'm like I got it, bro. I got to chill. Like and I you know I was just like. You know, I was dealing with a lot of resentments towards them. You know, I resented the program, you know, because it didn't work for them. Oh, and they tried, you know, and I was just like, fuck. That kept me out the longest. Like resenting like that it didn't work for them, you know, and I'm like, fuck that age. That shit didn't work for my parents. Like, why is it going to work for, you know, and finally I had a good, like a lot of friends like Hassan and Zach and, you know, homies that were in it. And I was just like, these guys look all right.
Oh, you
like,
knew them before you were sober.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're like, if it can work for Hassan, it can work for any of our
guys. Low key, bro, like, I think I had like 3 days, and Hassan came over to me, and Hassan's like, look what you accomplished fucked up. Imagine what you could do sober. And I was just like, boop, all right, let's go. That's what I needed. That's what I needed. Okay, ready to ride. It really hit me. Like, I was just like, that's my guy, and I was just like, okay, you're right. Like, imagine if I fucking, am I dialed in and really at peace with myself and prayer and meditation and all that shit. Because that shit, I never had that.
Yeah.
You know, and just for today's shit. Like, it's so cliche. Like, all the things. Like.
No, it's the same thing for me, too. Like, I've been sober for many times throughout my adult life. Sometimes for extended periods of time. Usually it was because the heat was on. I had a court case. I was on probation or a risk of going to prison, this, that, or the other thing. But when you get sober for real and you're doing this thing with the tools that are given to us in them fucking pages, it's like you get this freedom and then like you go into this next chapter that's kind of like the stuff you're talking about being conditioned to lose everything. Like I'm a fucking freak. Every time me and my wife get paid, I'm like, as I manage the money, I'm like, in my mind, in the back of my mind, I'll go, this is the last fucking money we're ever going to get. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like I'm not thinking that in my consciousness, but and I start fucking divvying it up and then I'm moving it around to this account, I'm all freaked out because that was how I lived my life in my 20s and 30s. I would build this fucking life up, the creative wreck years, like I had, you know, all the outside shit or whatever, and then I fucking traded it all into the dope man, and then I got sober for another stretch, and I traded it all into the dope man. I had my West Hollywood Beverly Hills stretch where, you know, to start an agency over there and cashed it all in, woke up from a blackout and cry help, not even with a fucking cell phone, and it's like, you gotta, you know,
you did have a flashlight, though.
I did have always had a flashlight on stage.
I lost so many friends to this shit, man. Yeah. Like Chris Garcia, I lost, you know, he was like, I was with him that night.
Oh, you were?
Yeah, man, we were up the block.
That's a weird fucking thing.
And I'm like, why am I any different? And I was psycho. I was like, I thought that I was different from everybody. Like, why am I any different from any of these motherfuckers that passed away? Because they were like, what, they were unlucky? Like, I'm like, this is gonna, like, I can't do this anymore. I got too much to live for. Like, and I had people that loved me, and I was just like, yo. Like, I wasn't used to that, and I was like, I had a fucking wake-up call, and I was just like, dude, you know,
I had to really open myself up to hear my wife say that shit out loud, like, dude, like, you know what I mean? It's gonna be okay. It's okay, you know what I mean? And, like, sitting there, and you're, you know, driving down the highway with my kids and my beautiful wife sitting next to me, and my fucking mind spinning around thinking about, like, dope deals that went wrong and like violent situations I was in. I'm like driving past an exit. I'm like, oh, some shit went down in that motel. You know what I mean? It's just like, dude, no, you're here. You're here with your family. You built this shit. You deserve this shit. It's like we're so conditioned to chaos and insanity. It's like really difficult to like stand still, sit still, and let people love us. It's wild, man.
You know, it's a trip about Chris Garcia, about Steven Arroyo and Sponto. All three of those guys separately. You bring them into the room, and they would, like, you sit down with them, they make you feel special.
They're light, dude. They would light up the fucking room.
Like,
Spondy used to call me on the phone, like, and I was in New York, and he would be talking about my wife. Like, he'd be like, yo, I was just at her house. She was asking about you. Like, it was just so many things. Like, you know, Steven was, like, one of my brothers. Like, it's just, it's just they were the huge, I mean, their loss was a real, and I dealt with, you know, Steven's loss in sobriety, and I was there, and I had the conversations with him, and I was, and he was happy for me, because he see me fucking, you know, out there, and
We got two questions that we ask, that we always ask.
All guests.
All guests. All right. Every guest, You know, it's funny. I actually, with the ghost story thing, I went on that podcast Otherworld to tell the Anton LaVey story. Yeah, dude, it was dope. And I, you know, and Jack was great, you know, something was pointed out to me. So I'll tell you the story after, you know, because I fucking told it too many times. But he told me something that I'd never heard before where he was like, oh, that's so, I had this guy that I met when I was 15 that basically gave us all these hard drugs and whatever. Mm-hmm. And he was like, I'm Anton LaVey. I didn't know who Anton LaVey was. Mm-hmm. You know, I was like, all right, cool, whatever. You know, you're some weird guy that had a bunch of money. I then, years later, I tell the story, and they're like, dude, that's the guy that fucking, that's like the fucking, the Church of Satan. That's the Satanic Bible guy, you know?
Church of Satan.
And like, to a T, it's fucking, it was the guy, you know? But the guy had died by the time this has happened. So that's like, that's my ghost story, you know?
You spent a day with the ghost of Anton LaVey.
But when I was talking to, fuck, I think the guy's name is Jack Wagner, you know? And he was like, you know, he's like, I did my research about this. We should really do our research more when we do fucking, you know. I know Dave, I know Reno be watching every fucking, you know, every documentary ever, you know, he'll have ChatGPT fucking, you know. But I don't research shit. And he goes, you know, Anton LaVey was actually very anti-drugs. And I had never known that, you know. And he goes, not only was he anti-drugs, you know. So then I started looking into it. And he wasn't anti, he didn't believe in doing drugs because he said, drugs are not good for the masters. They're good for the slaves. They're good for the slaves, but not for the masters.
Oh, nice.
Which was his quote.
That's wild. Yeah. But he didn't use, huh? He just ran around buying you guys drugs all day.
But also, like, how crazy, you know? Yeah. At least from what I remember, he gave us the drugs to use with him, you know? But I don't really, like, from what I remember.
That's fucking trippy, man. It's a great story.
So, with that said, have you ever seen a ghost?
I have seen a ghost. Yeah, I've seen a ghost. I've seen him numerous times. I've seen him. He was haunting. He was the guy who lived above the comedy club I used to work at in the city on 24th Street. And he used to work there and do the phones and do the front of house. He ended up ODing in his in the apartment above the comedy club. And he, like, lived at the comedy club, basically. He was, like, a staple. And I had to shimmy up the fire escape to find him. Because so I found this dead body.
Oh, damn.
I called my mom. They had to come and break the door down. My mom's like, get up there and see where he is because we haven't been able to get in touch with him in 3 days. And I shimmied up the fucking fire escape. I was like, yo, he's dead on his fucking, you know, and I seen him laid out on his couch. And then I continued to work at the comedy club and I would see him in the background. And one day we're sitting there, me and this Puerto Rican chick from the Bronx, Tiffany, I never forget. We would use the phones during. We would be there during the day before they service, and the phone was sitting on the bar, and the phone just went whoosh, against the wall on the bar. Whoa. And me and her just sitting there like, And I think this day, I think they people seen them and talk about it. But and then I've seen some shit in my
I've never seen places one, that I live
and
it.
Stuff. But I believe that, you know,
I've never seen one not on a 3 or 4 day meth bender. So,
you know, like I'd see like a shadow in the comedy club by like, the bathroom door and I'd be like, oh fuck, I'm going outside for a smoke. Wow. Like this is, give him a second.
Yeah.
What was the other question?
Have you ever smoked PCP?
Of course. I think there's like a prerequisite for any New York City. You know, that was around a lot. Yeah. I mean, my boys used to, funny, we had the flakes, you know, the mint leaves and then they had the dips. But my boys used to go, funny enough, they used to go to raves. Because we used to go to a lot of raves, too. Like, we were, like, that was the whole scene. And they would sell fake dips. They would put WD-40 in fucking... Like, any way you dip the cigarette in it. And they would just go there for, like, an hour, give everybody dips, like, make, like, $400 and leave. But meanwhile, these kids are smoking, like, their cigarettes are exploding from fucking motor oil. And, it was the crazy... I don't know. Yeah, dude, it was... Yeah, I hope they hear this podcast because they were maniacs. They were just selling fake hits. Like, it was just like a hustle. Like, white kids from Connecticut and like nerd, like, they were like, let's fucking go there and just sell them fake drugs. Like, they don't know any better. They don't know how PCP is supposed to smell. Yeah. Like, it kind of does smell like WD-40. Yeah. It
smells like paint thinner.
Yeah, it smells like, paint thinner. Like, acetone.
Yeah.
Did you ever have anything crazy happen on PCP?
Oh, well, one day I did it. We drove drove from Queens to Manhattan and not really, just getting stuck.
Yeah.
Like getting stuck. Like I seen my cigarettes on the dashboard. I remember clearly. I was like, there's a pack of Newports on the dashboard and we park up the side street in like Midtown Manhattan and we're just like overlooking the water and we're just zonked, all four of us. And I know I'm like trying to grab a pack of the smokes off the dashboard and my hand is moving so slow. It took me 2.5 hours to grab the pack of cigarettes. I was stuck so bad. Oh, I was smoked so, because we didn't know how, like, we were like, just like, we used to roll up, blunts and dip the blunts in them and stuff. But I would like, literally my hand would like this, and I'm sitting there, my hands just slowly moving. I thought, I got them. And they were like, dude, it's 9:30. You tried to get those at 6 o'clock. And I was just like, oh, fuck, I was stuck. Like, because you just get stuck on that shit. Yeah, not a really enjoyable. It wasn't, that wasn't
he
really.
He likes it.
I loved it. Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah, I grew up watching those cholos in my neighborhood just fucking lose it on get that wet. Shit. I just like, nah.
Pigeon coop
like,
shit.
See,
that
we
shit
didn't
real.
Hear what it wasn't ever like a party thing. Like, it was like, if you had done it, you would go out to the hood and you would get it from the cholos. And we brought it back. And we had a thing where, like, we just enjoyed, we just wanted to do drugs.
Yeah,
we
wanted to get high.
It didn't matter what it was. And we would, like, dip a bunch of them. We'd go out to clubs. You know, there was this club, I remember it was downtown. It might still be there. It was called One Eye Jack. And it was like a little, like, yeah, I don't know. Is it still there?
Sounds like a club you smoke PCP.
Yeah, it was there. Yeah. When we were going, people would, they had like a big outdoor smoking area. And like we went there, we saw like Santo Gold or somebody night, you know? And as like whatever the, you know, whoever played, everybody came outside to smoke. And I literally had a pack with like a bunch of fucking, just a bunch of dips in it. And people started asking to bum cigarettes. And I like lit one up. And I kind of like looked at the homie and I was like, fuck it, let's just fucking hand them. And we just started handing them out. And not telling fools. And fools were just smoking them and being like, what is this? You know, dude, Yeah, and that thing that you talked about with selling the fake stuff, you know, we had a friend, rest in peace, Chris Collins. We had him on the podcast, and he passed away. He was a guy that, like, that carried the message to me and, like, never gave up on me and helped me and didn't fucking make it, you know? But that fool was the king of selling fake drugs.
Yeah, that was
he
a
would
big
go
thing.
On, yeah,
that
he
was
would go
hustle,
on Craigslist.
Dude. Yeah.
He would go on Craigslist, and he would be like, okay, like, he would come into my house and be like, okay, what do you got? And he would see, like, if I had, like, vitamin C capsules, he'd be like, okay, Molly, you know, and he'd go on and be like, hey, I got MDMA capsules, you know, and would sell them, and fools would go and buy them. He would be like, okay, you got fucking, what do they call it? The fucking, the little, the sweet, like the sweet tarts or whatever. He would wrap them in foam, like, okay, LSD. And he would post it on there, or he would find fools looking for shit, and he would go and sell to them, would come back. He'd get a call like 3-4 hours later, and they'd be like, dude, this shit doesn't work. And he'd say, oh man, I think that was a bad batch. But I got some fucking whoop 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 now, and literally we'll go and sell them more.
Let's be clear right now. Anybody buying drugs off Craigslist, you deserve to buy fake drugs. Yeah. You fucking nerd. Go out on the street and fucking buy your real drugs. Don't be fucking buying them
like
on the internet, you weirdo.
Like a man. Yeah,
totally. Get the fuck out of here.
I did someone real dirty on Craigslist that was looking for Norcos one time.
Oh my God. Man. I didn't know Craigslist was a fucking breeding ground for.
Dude.
I didn't know. I missed that whole wave.
Yeah. Oh,
like. I learned about it from Danny, but you go on and search like.
Now it's banned. Roofing tar. So roofing tar is heroin. Ladders is Xanax.
What
fucking,
the fuck?
Hey, yeah. Tina Turner tickets is crystal meth. Yeah.
Or windows. Oh, and roofing tar.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's that
window
shit was
panes,
going. That shit was going crazy.
Right? Oh, it's banned. Yeah, now
the
they're
keywords
like.
Keywords are banned?
Yeah.
I was fucking. Venmoing somebody the other day or receiving a Venmo. And you know how like people are so stupid they fucking have their. Like history of Venmo, like visible to the fucking world.
Yeah, weirdos.
And it's all you got to do is just click private or whatever. But I saw someone's name, a girl that we both know from CRLA days. That I was like, oh shit, what's she up to? And I click her fucking thing, and her last purchase was from like Eduardo Santino water. And then I clicked Eduardo's profile, and it was like. 100 different people just water. He's fucking dealing
money.
Everybody in the fucking city is just paying him with Venmo. Just water. I was like, damn.
Unregulated. I love it.
Yeah. That's crazy, man. That's crazy.
Word. Well, fuck, dude. Thanks so much, Molly. Anything else you want to say? Anything you want? If somebody's listening that's like, yo, don't know what's going on, is there anything you want to say to somebody? You know,
I'm not like, you know, I'm not out there. If anybody wants to fucking, you know, help, like, there's people out there like me and other people that, you know, I'm never trying to like push anything on anybody or I'm not like that guy. Like, but if somebody needs help in this or trying to fucking get sober or, you know, has questions about it, I'm always available.
Yeah.
You know,
right on,
that's really what it
right
is.
On.
Like, I'm not, you know, I don't want to push it on anybody and, you know, make those like, do I have friends that qualify? Like, you know, when they're ready, they're ready, you know, and when you're ready, you'll know. And, you know, I'm always available and I'm always of service to whoever needs it. You know, I'm always, you know,
he is about it.
Shining example, bro.
Just, you know,
shit works.
How long do you have now?
Almost 2 years.
Nice.
That's one of the things with social media and with where we're at, you know, it's like the program or like getting sober 10, 15 fucking years ago coming around Like, you didn't envision it as being something that was, like, that was cool. Like, you wouldn't see, like, you didn't know motherfuckers unless you had actually, like, walked through the fucking doors and seen it. And you're like, oh, this isn't, like, you would imagine it as, like, a bunch of fucking old guys sitting around smoking cigarettes in a fucking circle and folding chairs. Yeah. And, like, that's one of the cool things with fucking with social media, with, like, algorithm and all that fucking shit. Like, you get to see people, you get to see that this shit is, like, fun, and we get to fucking have a good time.
Yeah, you know, Two Tone was my homie. I seen him do it, and he was, like, a real catalyst to me, you know, like, seeing that it worked, and, you know, a lot of you guys, and... You know, if anybody needs a fucking, you know, I'm always here to offer the hand of AA to whoever needs it, as cheesy as it sounds. You know what I mean?
It's meaningful,
you
know, man. I mean,
it's a very simple program. You know, it's not the, you know, your life's not over. It's just beginning, as cheesy as that sounds. And it's true. You know what I mean? And you don't have to drive the car off the cliff to fucking, you know, to really get it. Like, you just need the desire to want to stop.
I met Perp Polly early on, and he was already, like, happy and
good. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because I literally got into the work, and I really was just like, dude, I'm like, it's a spark
happened. Yeah, man. I mean, it's funny because, you know, you said multiple times during us chatting about, I don't mean to sound cheesy.
You know, but I say all the cliche easy does it. But it's true.
Well, that's
just
what,
like,
I say a lot of times in my shares in the rooms, because, dude, I started going on court cards to this shit when I was in my late teens, and you see this shit emblazoned everywhere, like, easy does it, one day at a time, like, all this shit, first things first, and it's meaningless until you get to a point where you're like, I can't fucking live that way anymore. Yeah. And then you come in here and you see everybody here and you start chopping it up and you feel that love and support. And those words start jumping off the page at you.
Yeah.
Those sayings jump off the wall at you, because it really is that simple, man. Yeah. It's just picking a different lane, getting in that motherfucker, and starting to subscribe to a different way of life that's not fucking running around trying to cop every day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I'm at the point right now where I'm seeing how it really works, like, really helping and really doing, like, people ask me if I got to share or whatever, like, because I know how much it meant to me in the beginning, like, to hear a home, like, somebody like you speak or somebody like you speak, and I'm like, oh, fuck, okay, like, so if I could show somebody, like, they could connect, and, you know, I tell all my guys, like, stop, you know, look at, all the similarities, the feelings and all that shit, that's what you got to look at, you know.
Yeah. No, absolutely, man, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for coming
on. Thank you, guys. Yeah.
Thanks
I love you guys.
Thanks for listening. We love you. Man,
thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
Peace.
Cool.